Hello and welcome, dear viewers, to Weekly Scope, your weekly dose of news and information from the Middle East. I'm your host, Sarah Musa. Today's articles will be the following. Syria's first line of defense, dial 133 by Franklin Lamb in counterpunch. And Israeli warning, nothing could stop Hezbollah's missiles. Al-Assad holds tight grip by Yahya Dbou in Al-Akhbar. And of course, to dig into the analysis, we are glad to have with us a Syrian activist and one of our finest political analysts, Kivork El-Masian. Hello and welcome.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for being with us. And of course, we send our deep condolences to all the martyrs that are falling in Syria on a daily basis. And our hearts are with you and the Syrians, of course. Before we start our analysis, allow us to see the latest news in the Middle East with this report. We'll watch it together. Starting with Al-Akhbar, Egyptian activist dies from police torture, the new Khalid Saeed. Israel arrests 22 Hamas members ahead of Fatah Hamas talks. Iraq, suicide blast kills 23 government militiamen collecting salaries. Israel say Syria strike shows when we say something, we mean it. Al-Bawaba, dodgy brakes blamed as 22 die in horror Abu Dhabi bus crash. Survivors of a smash that killed their colleagues have described how their journey to work on Monday morning ended in horror. I have a drone. Secret memo reveals Obama's legal justifications for Yemen strikes. The document obtained by NBC News shows how senior US officials can act with impunity outside of normal legal procedures. Syria's opposition offers Assad an exit strategy. Opposition leader Ahmed Maaz al-Khatib urges President Assad to start talks about leaving the country and handing over power. Israel's strike on Syria will increase support for Assad. A Western diplomat tells Lebanese politicians that the attack by Israel on Tuesday night will only increase regime support. Egypt, minister resigns over film police beating. The culture minister resigns after images of police brutality are aired on TV. Israel goes on spree of Hamas arrests in the West Bank. The Jewish state arrests 23 members of Hamas, including 3 lawmakers in the occupied territories. As for Sharq al-Awsat, suicide bomber kills 4 north of Baghdad. Iran says Israel will regret Syria airstrike. Hamas says 20 of its members arrested by Israel. Syrian TV airs purported images of Israel's strike. Suicide car bomb kills 15 in the northern Iraq. Turkish leftist group claims US embassy bombing. Middle East Online. Syria opposition chief to Assad. I want talks with Sharaa. Khatib says he is ready to meet Syrian VP who has seen that things are not going in the right direction. Egypt culture minister resigns over police abuse. Activist death in custody Rhinites calls for police reform as culture minister steps down in protest at police abuses. France pounds Islamist supply routes in Mali. Washington backs Paris call to make African mission formal UN peacekeeping operation in Mali. Libyan new rulers fear second revolution against revolution. New rulers are under attack for lack of reforms, face protests on February 15, being touted by some as second revolution. Kivork, thank you once again for being with us. When one listens to the news, you wonder how can Libya and Egypt, countries that really needed revolutions and really needed reforms, how can we go and pour it all on in a country like Syria that didn't need reform and pour all our energy in order to distort the people there and distort the country as a whole? Allow us to start commenting on the news, to start with Egypt. Today we know that a new martyr has fallen in Egypt, and they call him the new Khaled Said, because the Egyptians have promised they want a second revolution and they truly want real change, and that Mohamed Morsi is not giving them that change. On the contrary, they see him as a dictator. How do you see the situation in Egypt?
First of all, the revolution that happened 2 years ago in Egypt was a genuine revolution. All the Arab street was inspired by what happened in Egypt, but the Americans were also surprised. They tried to manage the change, or what they called the democratic transition in Egypt. But the problem was that the Qataris and other allies of the United States, they supported the Muslim Brotherhood because they are basically implementing the American capitalist system in Egypt, and they are having money from the IMF and other bank organizations, which are all of them are related with the link to the United States. Now, today, the demands of the Egyptian people didn't accomplish. Because they asked for freedom, but now we can see that if you criticize the Egyptian president or other personnel inside the government, you can be sued, and even for tweeting on the social media. So the basis of and the roots of the revolution didn't accomplish. And until this moment. But for me, I think that the Egyptian people are one of the most genuine people in the Middle East, and they will ask for their demands to the end, because no one can stop the revolutions, genuine revolutions, and no one can stop people from beating and having their own freedom. And this is what's happening now in Egypt.
Definitely. We are also seeing another move in Libya. They have called for a second revolution, they have called for new reforms. The situation in Libya, and as it is in Egypt, of course, we haven't seen any change in the Middle East as it was promised. And we do know, everybody knows, that a revolution needs years. And a revolution perhaps needs a decent leadership, something that is not there in the Middle East. How do you see the situation in Libya?
Look, what happened in Egypt, we cannot compare it with Libya, because in Libya there wasn't an Egyptian revolution. Mm-hmm. Because I call in Egypt, in Libya, it was ignited a civil war by foreign states, civil war between Qaddafi forces and other opposition forces. And the NATO intervention killed the revolution, because a foreign intervention finished every
Definitely.
Aspect of revolution in your country. Now the Libyans overthrew Qaddafi, and they created a new dictatorship inside their country, even though this government came within democratic elections, but this state oppressed all the Gaddafi supporters, which are by millions, by the way, and they even committed a lot of atrocities. There are thousands of people died inside tribes, in black people, against black people, and no one is talking about it. If you read the human rights organization, you will see enormous human rights abuses. So also in Libya, people demanded, and foreign states intervened, they killed the revolution, and they appointed another government. So what we are seeing today, that foreign governments, especially in the Western countries, they are afraid of genuine revolutions. They want to kill revolutions, because if awakening, in the sense of awakening, because when people in our area start to think, it will be like Iran. Because in Iran you have independent technology, independent science. They are afraid of independent knowledge of the Arab people. That's why they always intervene at the right moment, and they kill the revolution. This is what happened also in Libya.
What about to move and talk about Syria in depth? We are hearing stances from the opposition wanting to open up calls, and we hear other stances that they don't want to open up calls. The double standards of the opposition in Syria, can we comment on that?
The problem with the opposition, that there is no opposition, there are oppositions. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of blocs, a lot of opposition groups, everybody has their own project. Some of them are they accepted to negotiate or dialogue with the government from the first days, but others insisted to overthrow the government and then to start their dialogue. But now we are in a deadlock. Okay, people are dying every day on daily basis, and we have to stop the bloodshed. Sheikh Maaz al-Khatib, he asked for a dialogue with the deputy, the vice president of
mm-hmm.
Syria.
Yes.
I think for me this is a good starting. Okay. Because for me, the problem in Syria is both internal and external. On the internal level, we could have a unity government headed by Farouk al-Sharaa, because he is very clever and he is one of the most important politicians in, yes, in the government. So if he led this government, but in one condition, that President Assad should also participate in the elections, because Assad has a huge support from the public in Syria. Otherwise, he wouldn't be able to survive until this moment. So, if we want a real democratic transition in Syria, all parties should participate in democratic transition, and then the elections should decide which party has the majority in the parliament. And then they can choose their
own. But however could that happen when, you know, there are external factors that are affecting the country as a whole, and as a dialogue, they don't need any dialogue. The whole policy was always divide and conquer, and that's what's happening in Syria. Don't you think that external factors will affect the internal dialogue?
Absolutely. This is the fault of the opposition, because they took the file of the case of Syria to United Nations, to Arab League, and to other organizations. They wanted to internationalize the Syrian internal crisis. Mm-hmm. This is their problem now. Mm-hmm. Now the whole problem in Syria is between United States and Russia, and if they agreed on how to solve the Syrian crisis, it would have nothing to do with the democratic transition, because all states, regional and international, they have their own interests. And in Syria, the Americans have their own security interests, and the Russians their geopolitical interests. And that's why first of all, we have to stop the bloodshed, and then to move to the external factors. First of all, we have the sanctions. It costed us billions of dollars, okay? And the embargo, trade embargo, diplomatic embargo, and now we have other also, like the borders with Turkey. Until when the borders should be open, and all these mercenaries are coming to Syria, with thousands of people are coming to fight the Syrians.
Definitely.
And then we have, people would be surprised, but the Syrian case is interrelated and interconnected with other issues, like the Iranian nuclear program, with the missile shield of Russia. The Russians are fiercely defending Syria. Why? Because the American missile shield is surrounding Russia. It's a mere lie to say that it's only targeted against Iran. It's targeted also against Russia, because it is installed on the eastern and the southern eastern part of Russia. That's why the Russians, if they lost their last naval port in Tartus, they will have no ports outside outside Russia. And if this Tartus naval base is developed, it can be a natural place for a counter missile system. You know, and this is all about a new Cold War. The Russians and the Americans can stop this craziness if they agreed to end this bloodshed in Syria, because it's basically now between these two countries, and their puppets in the area, they will follow what the American dictations.
Definitely. We heard a couple of analysis. They were saying that in a couple of months we will witness talks between Russia and America over the situation in Syria. Right after this these leaks, we saw the Israeli attack that was Tuesday night. The attack, don't you think that it will extend to a certain point? Because we also heard in the news today, we heard that this Israeli attack will actually increase the supporters of Assad and will actually unite the Syrians. How do you see the situation?
Look, I will go back a little bit. I will say that Barack Obama, first of all, he empowered himself in his second term presidency. Mm-hmm. He appointed John Kerry and Jack Hagel, and he also forced the former CIA, the head of the former CIA, to resignation. Okay, and then when he appointed, as I said, John Kerry, he is a friend of Bashar al-Assad. He knows Syria quite well, and he knows the importance of Syria for peace process in the Middle East. Now, in my opinion, John Kerry and other diplomats will open a secret channels with President Bashar al-Assad. They want to end the bloodshed in Syria for two reasons. Because if these radical elements has been infiltrated to Turkey, it's their major ally. Mm-hmm. And as we can see now, there is an upheaval in Turkey. And the second thing is, as you said, the Israeli attack. The Israelis, they are very happy that the Syrians are in a war of attrition. and neither side is winning. Both sides are destroying each other. The infrastructure of the country is going to be destroyed. And the army is losing a lot of generals and pilots and a lot of tanks. So this is in the national interest of Israel for the war to continue. Mm-hmm. So any end for the war inside Syria is against the Israeli national interest. The Israelis, by their attack in Syria, they wanted to ignite the war. And this is the reality. The Israelis want to even push the Americans into war in the area, but the Syrians, if they retaliated against this war, against this attack, a regional war would possibly happen. And this is not in our interest now, because we have to solve our domestic problems first, and then to direct our resources against the Zionist entity, not when we are fighting inside our country.
An article was written on that by Yahya Bouin al-Akhbar. Israeli warning nothing could stop Hezbollah's missiles. Al-Assad holds tight grip in relations with the presence of Hezbollah and the resistance. And perhaps all our analysis says that it's all about the resistance and it's all about Iran. When they want to target Syria, it is because Syria has always been supporting the resistance and has always been an ally to Iran. The article starts by saying Israeli military sources warned of an unprecedented confrontation with Hezbollah based on the Syrian crisis. However, reiterated that the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad exceeded all expectations, did not escape, and proved to have his father's genes. Israeli Yediot Ahronot daily cited the Israeli military sources as underscoring the security situation in the North Front is extremely tense, and to deterrence to Hezbollah is headed towards a huge defeat. How do you see that?
The presence of Bashar al-Assad now is very important for the future of the resistance in the area. They targeted, there is a very simple equation now in the Middle East. If you can't target Iran, target Syria. It's only mm-hmm. strategic ally in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. Okay, Syria is transforming. We are proud of sending weapons to Hezbollah, because on the diplomatic and political level, maybe the government, they don't declare in media that they are sending, but this is the truth. Syria is sending weapons, okay. If they cut this weapon supply to Hezbollah, maybe Hezbollah can confront Israel one war or two wars maximum. And after that, who will send weapons to Hezbollah? No one, because Iran cannot send it via water, because Israelis are controlling all the Mediterranean now, and even the Americans. Now we have this threat against this excess of resistance is a threat for the whole region, because if Syria has been fallen, because I say Syria, because the regime now is the state. It has the government and the army. If the Syrian army has been collapsed, okay, the whole generation and the whole identity of the Middle East will be collapsed, because the resistance is not about only people, it's culture, it's ideology. And the Syrian government is always giving this ideology for its people via education, via television, via media, via all every means, okay? So if the Americans succeeded, I hope not. I think they will never be able to overthrow Syria. Because Syria is a civilization, it's not only a yes. state. If they replace this government, we will do another revolution and we will bring our own resistant government once again, because this is in our culture. So the Israelis now, even the reports, the current reports, the recent reports, they say that the Israelis are sending a lot of warplanes now over Lebanon and intensive flights over Lebanon. Why? They are not provoking Hezbollah. They know that Hezbollah has now anti-aircraft missiles, but they want to know the places of this missile, because everything is hidden now in Lebanon, and the element of surprise in Hezbollah is very decisive, because the Israelis, they don't know what Hezbollah have now. If in 2006 they were able to target after Haifa, and the Palestinian resistance were able to hit the suburbs of Tel Aviv, so what Hezbollah have?
Definitely, in Hezbollah Secretary General's latest speech, we heard his tone, and the whole world witnessed such tone, and they know very well that behind this tone there are hidden surprises, as you just mentioned. The article did also say that Hezbollah is back in the game, and has all the pretexts needed. And when al-Assad's army opens its chemical and biological weapon warehouses for everyone, Hezbollah will be the first to receive these weapons. The article somehow, it's sourcing to a point that Hezbollah and Syria are ready. If there was an attack, there will be a confrontation.
Look, I don't agree with the author that the Syrians will send any chemical or biological weapons to Hezbollah, because these weapons were made for deterrence reasons. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. Hafez Assad developed these weapons for that Israelis or the United States would not be able to attack Syria. They don't need to send them to Hezbollah. This is for Syria to use against their enemies. Mm-hmm. Well, if there is any case, scenario for foreign intervention in Syria, Syria will use it against their enemies. Why to send them to Hezbollah? You know. But this alliance between Hezbollah and Syria is existed until this moment. And the recent reports, even in Washington Post, the unnamed diplomat said that Syrians were sending weapons now to Hezbollah, and the Israelis targeted it. So even in these hard conditions, Syrians are still sending weapons to the resistance in in Lebanon. In future wars, this is for me, this is the scenario. Hezbollah and Syria should fight together against Israel, because Israel now, they have, it's quite well known that Israel has a geopolitical weakness. They cannot maneuver inside their territories. That's why they always attack on the territories of the others. We have to attack them first. We have to make the war on their territories, not on our territories. And that's how we can defeat them. Plus, imagine if the Syrians or Hezbollah they were able to hit strategic places in Tel Aviv or maybe the Dimona reactor. What would happen in the future of the Israelis themselves, the Jews? They would escape the country because they don't have their roots is not here. This place doesn't belong to them. They came from from Russia, from Europe, and they settled here on the expense of other people. So their identity is not here. They are living here because there are a lot of facilities for them, free places, free homes, and jobs and everything. That's the truth.
Definitely. The article says that there are sources that caution that the next confrontation with Hezbollah will show an absolutely different and weaker Israel than the one that had been seen in Gaza. We hope so. We are waiting for that, and perhaps the whole Middle East is waiting for such a confrontation, because with the tones today we heard in the news, when Israel says, when we say something, we do it, such tone today should be broken down by resistance and by the, of course, path of the revolutionists. The second article is by Franklin Lamb, Syria's First Line of Defense, Dial 133. According to Franklin Lamb, he witnessed the efforts of the Syrian Arab Republic Red Crescent youth, who are trying to assist the wounded and the injuries that are happening on daily basis. He was pointing out to the sacrifices, and he was pointing out that there are so many efforts by the youth given to their people, and he was pointing out to the unity of the Syrians in Syria. He also said that there are places and times that the emergency vehicles cannot go, and more than four dozens of the volunteers have been reported killed or injured while performing their humanitarian work. Every bombing and disaster in Syria these days brings more applications to join more volunteer teams. Despite that, he's saying that volunteers are applying on daily basis despite the martyrdom of others. Such is the character of the Syrian people, an amalgam of their history, their culture, their Arab nationalism and resistance stance. He says current shortages for emergency services in Syria include medicines and medical equipment, fuel, food boxes, blankets, and of course cooking utensils. Some of these shortages are the direct and foreseeable result of the US-led sanctions daily targeting the civilian population of Syria, with the hope that riots from the cold, malnourished, suffering civilian population will cause the elected government of Syria to falter and the Western goal of regime change will follow. We won't have time to comment on that, unfortunately. Our time is up. But we would like our viewers to read this article because it really points out to the truth and the true reality of the Syrians and their nationalism and the unity of them. Kivorik, I want to thank you for being with
thank
us.
You.
And of course, we hope that the Syrians and the Arab world find freedom away from any intervention that is trying to break us apart.
Shana.
Thank you for being with us. Dear viewers, thank you for watching and stay tuned for a lot of shows on Saha TV. Peace be upon you. Thank you.